Review of Small Farm Futures by Chris Smedge. In 1926, 90% of the vegetables consumed in Vancouver came from the Chinese market gardens growing along the Fraser River. From A Seat at the Table, Chinese Immigration and British Columbia, exhibition in the Cumberland Museum, 2023. And on the one hand, there is the work of offering palliative care to assist with what is dying, i.e. hospicing. On the other hand, there is the work of assisting with the birth of something new without suffocating it with projections. It is assisting with midwifery, Vanessa Machado de Oliveira in Hospicing Modernity. I was sitting at the Grind this afternoon, my go-to spot for coffee here in Cumberland, where I endured an unsought overhearing of one of those cell phone conversations that I would prefer to forget. Complaining about the need to nap after his workout, the ball-capped speaker then regaled his listener about the effing idiocy of those who feel the Bible is boring. For therein he proclaimed was information, among other things, about the coming hordes of giants and demonic aliens. Be very afraid. He's right about that, as was Strider speaking to Frodo. But it's the polycrisis that's got me worried, and it's not something in the future, be it near or distant. As Michael Lerner writes in the L.A. Progressive, the polycrisis is something new, a confluence of environmental, social, technological, financial, economic, natural, and other forces interacting with ever-increasing unpredictability, rapidity, and power. We believe these unpredictable interactions are causing future shocks of ever greater frequency and amplitude. Lerner maps three ways that the polycrisis is currently being regarded. From the perspective of worldview, orientations like techno-optimism, neo-Marxism, critiques of colonialism and imperialism, religious or spiritual understandings, or systems analysis, attempts to be analytically neutral, for example, Davos Risk, Global Risk Report, Raworth's Donut Economics, Cascade Institute, or the 1972 Limits to Growth Report, or narrative. Three ways: worldview, systems analysis, narrative. The latter represented by Kim Stanley Robertson's Ministry for the Future. I currently continue to navigate with one version of the worldview set, specifically that found in Vanessa Oliveira de Machado de Oliveira's Hospicing Modernity. For my money, the immediate response to any one of these maps is to fight, flight, or freeze. Those of you who have been with GTEC for a while will likely know that I'm pretty clear we're facing fairly near-term collapse of the many interlocking systems that comprise modernity, what some folk refer to as the machine. As we enter August, the signs seem pretty obvious. The hottest summer in 125,000 years. Ocean temperatures over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Stationary heat domes over parts of the U.S., wildfires around the Mediterranean, and the list goes on. I haven't even started to list the bombshells of the political sphere or the financial. It's hard, isn't it, to find a balance, to hold this moment of collapse and awareness, to not sink into the sofa of ignorance and denial, to be with modernity as it dies, to sit as witness to the good, the bad, and the ugly, as the pain and suffering of its demise spreads and intensifies. In Hospicing Modernity, Vanessa describes the four constitutive denials that restrict our capacity to sense, relate, and imagine our current reality and its alternatives. The denial of systemic, historic, and ongoing violence. The denial of the limits of the planet. The denial of our entanglement with each other and the land that results in the experience of separation and isolation, and the denial of the magnitude of the complexity of the problem that seeks us to seek simplistic solutions. Faced with these constraints on even recognizing our common and wicked predicament, becomes almost an insurmountable challenge to engage with the practice of midwifery, of hope, to imagine and to begin the work of birthing a more just and beautiful world. Having embraced the notion that the end of the world as we know it is not necessarily the end of the world per se, I can't emphasize that more, the end of the world as we know it is not necessarily the end of the world per se, there is value in imagining our current role of midwifery into something worth living for. I'm hurt and heartened by Chris Smedge's recent Small Farm Futures, the title of which is virtually, subtitle of which is virtually a manifesto in itself. Making the case for a society built around local economies, self-provisioning agricultural diversity, and a shared earth. I don't believe that there's anything like a simple response to what we're up against, but Smedge makes a compelling case for grounding anything like a viable future in our capacity as humans to cooperate with our landscapes to provide the necessities of life, namely food, shelter, and water, and do it in a way that is just and equitable. I'm reminded of the old Wobbly maxim, building the new society in the shell of the old. Even as signs of the collapse multiply, there are things we can do. For example, most of us can grow at least something to lessen our dependency on the supply chains that currently sustain us. To be perfectly honest, I am not a farmer, not even close, not even much of a gardener, though I am hoping for a few more potatoes than last year, as long as someone waters them now and then in our absence. My relationship to growing things has been more likely in an inquiry into the various and diverse meanings of soil, earth, and dirt, as opposed to sinking my fingers into them. But over the years, I have made some efforts and have had some success with the small gardens, both flower and veggie, that we have grown. The encouragement I find in these minimal successes in these endeavors opens my mind and heart to the content and passion of Smedge's book. I believe that visions for and of the future should be held lightly, if at all, but I am very grateful for his contribution to a flavor of the possible. The sense that a hoped-for culture could arise from the ashes of the present. Read the book for how he takes us there. It begins with his own review of the polycrisis described previously by Lerner. This section may be a challenge for some readers unfamiliar with current research in the fields of social science, economics, and agriculture, as it takes a deep dive into the statistics emerging in these various fields. Taken together, the 10 crises explored here, population, climate, energy, soil, stuff, water, land, health and nutrition, political economy, and culture, constitute a clear and specific danger of what we are up against. However, Smedge's reading of this confluence is not entirely negative. As he says, these sobering implications are potentially liberating, because they suggest that the present structuring of the global economy can't continue, freeing us to work towards other kinds of economy. This is the lodestar of an emerging movement in economics, working under the banner of degrowth that aims to rethink the whole basis of economic action. Like others, for example, Dugald Hine in At Work in the Ruins, while vitally concerned with the existential threat of the climate emergency, Smedge provides a more comprehensive critique of our situation and proposes a set of possibilities that might guide us, individually and collectively, through this moment. A future organized around a small farm, agrarian populism, inherited from the first populist movement in ways fit for present times, that enable people to provision themselves collectively. Smedge guides us through the current alternatives to industrial agriculture, biointensification, biomimicry, organics, regenerative agriculture, and permaculture, settling on the latter, permaculture, as the most promising, emphasizing design solutions that are specific to each occasion. He suggests that the emphasis on the labor-intensive personal production of the homesteader allies most closely with the small farm future he envisions, embodying four broad and essential themes: biointensification, biomimicry, inevitable trade-offs, and a significant larger proportion of rural farmers than exists today. Its vision in many ways echoes the prescience of E.F. Schumacher, writing in Small is Beautiful, 1973, people, quote, organized in small units will take better care of their bit of land or other natural resources than anonymous companies or megalomaniac governments. I really admire Smedge's integrity in eschewing universal prescriptions. Throughout the book, he cautions us, through example and argument, of the importance of the local, that each jurisdiction, each community, each neighborhood must discover its own way forward. Significant diversity exists in a range of critical factors around the globe in terms of climate, soil, water, financial structures, infrastructure, political economy, and culture. For example, the single factor of land usage here in British Columbia differs radically from that in Smedge's England, as well as elsewhere on Turtle Island. Proponents of bioregionalism may find both confirmation and inspiration in his analysis. There are approximately 5.4 million people in BC, sharing 4.6 million hectares of land designated as agricultural, that is, within the agricultural land reserve. In the UK, there are approximately 68 million, sharing between 18 and 19 hectares. Thus, in British Columbia, 5%, a mere 5% of our land base is at this point deemed agricultural, compared to an equivalent of around 72% of the United Kingdom. Interestingly, the number of farms in BC had decreased from 21,835 in the 1996 census to 17,528 in 2016. The number of family farms had decreased from almost 22,000 and 570 odd corporate farms to 17,000 and roughly 360 respectively. Currently, it's extremely hard for small farmers on Vancouver Island to make a living, given problems of scale and food costs. For example, we recently bought a locally produced cauliflower for $18. Translating the vision of a small farm future to British Columbia and probably other places as well does seem very challenging, but Smedge's approach to envisioning how things could look in Britain by 2050, chapter 11, is very helpful in kickstarting a practical approach. There he maps a very conservative model that accounts for significant population increase due to an influx of climate refugees, climate change, energy descent, water stress, economic crisis, and human conflict on the global stage. Assuming population changes, low crop yields, and optimal nutritional resources, with eight types of farmer, food producer, or land user, he still makes the case that Britain can become food self-sufficient by 2050. A similar modeling for this locale is beyond my capacity, but his work suggests to me that a shift from reliance on our current global system would be possible, if not also absolutely necessary. A clear fault line within this system, this global system that we have, is visible in the ongoing protests in Europe, particularly in the Netherlands, against government policies intended to minimize the climate effects of industrial-scale farming, specifically regarding methane and nitrogen cycles from livestock. The so-called war against farms and farmers have become fodder for right-wing forces and conspiracy theorists pushing back against state efforts to reduce emissions on behalf of a livable planet. In a recent blog, Smedge notes, quote, regarding climate, the issue of ruminant methane emissions sucks the air out of more important questions, such as transitioning to low-energy agrarian localism. If governments were equal to present challenges, they'd declare a proper climate emergency and start taking radical and immediate action to bring down atmospheric greenhouse gas levels. The ruminant climate narrative basically gives the appearance of trying to do something while achieving nothing of importance and not upsetting anyone of importance. This is an all people, all sectors, all at the same time thing, or it's nothing. Fundamentally, Small Farm Future is an attempt to, as he says, help in the work of constructing local forms of community in the context of our new dark ages. This vision of a system organized around agroecological farming and the consumption of a diverse range of fresh and minimally processed whole foods, promoting biodiversity and the capacity to produce enough healthy food for a growing population on a lower land footprint than today with massive climate benefits. As such, I highly recommend it, as well as Chris Smage's excellent website, where his regular blog posts cover the most significant issues facing food and agriculture today. Thanks for listening.